Hello and welcome. You're listening to Poor in New York, and my name is P.J. Benzaleski. On August 9th, 2014, a crime took place in the city of Ferguson, Missouri. An 18-year-old African-American male by the name of Michael Brown felt the need for some cigarillos, so he committed a strong-arm robbery at a convenience store. After leaving the store, he encountered police officer Darren Wilson. Wilson was inside his vehicle when he came upon Brown and one of his friends. A struggle ensued, and Brown attempted to take the officer's gun. After being unable to do so, he started running away, but then he turned and came back towards Wilson. And as we now know, that was the wrong move. At this point, Wilson said he feared for his life, and he opened fire, and he killed Brown. There was no video of what happened. Some witnesses came forth saying that Wilson shot Brown in the back, that Brown had his hands up and was asking him not to shoot. Well, after an investigation by the FBI showed this version to be untrue. Eyewitness reports, along with forensic evidence, caused the grand jury not to indict. But that didn't matter to some people. There were riots for several days in Ferguson, and people could still be heard using the narrative, "Hands up, don't shoot," although it never happened. Since then, it appears that police officers throughout the country aren't doing everything they can to fight crime. FBI Director James Comey agrees with the phenomenon, but this has put him at odds with many people in law enforcement. But now, some people who disagreed with the FBI director are starting to feel differently. University of Missouri St. Louis criminologist Richard Rosenfeld published a paper last June which argued that the Ferguson effect was not real. Rosenfeld's take on the matter was picked up by media outlets around the country, which caused many to doubt the Ferguson effect on crime. But Rosenfeld has recently announced he's changed his mind. Looking at data from 56 large cities across the country, Rosenfeld found a 17% increase in homicide in 2015. Much of that increase came from only 10 cities. These cities showed a 33% rise in homicide rates. "These aren't flukes or blips. This is a real increase," he said. "It was worrisome. We need to figure out why it happened." All 10 cities that saw sudden increases in homicide had large African American populations, he said. While it's not clear what drove the increases, he said, he believes there is some connection between high-profile protests over the police killings of unarmed black men, a further breakdown in black citizens' trust of the police, and an increase in community violence. "The only explanation that gets the timing right is a version of the Ferguson effect," Rosenfeld said. Now, he said, that's his leading hypothesis. I mean, no one wants to accept the fact that cops might be looking the other way. I agree that there's a police pullback, but I don't believe it has to do with Ferguson alone. On May 1st, 2015, Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby brought charges against six officers in the death of a Baltimore resident, Freddie Gray. On April 19th, 2015, Gray was hanging out in his neighborhood when he saw police officers on patrol. He made eye contact with them and then began to run away. Naturally, the police pursued him, apprehended him, handcuffed him, and requested a transport vehicle be sent to the scene to take Gray to central booking. While waiting for the transport, Gray can be heard on video screaming and yelling. It's unclear if he was actually in pain or perhaps faking it. And that happens a lot when someone's arrested. They don't want to be handcuffed or, for that matter, arrested. He appears to have a problem standing, but it's obvious that he's conscious and knows what's going on. So when the van arrives, the officers on the scene assist in loading Gray in, and it'll make three more stops before finally becoming aware that Freddie Gray is in pretty bad shape. He's in a coma, which he never comes out of, and he dies several days later. In Baltimore, things start to get out of hand with demonstrators and rioters. On May 1st, Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn J. Mosby held a press conference at which he told the public that all six officers involved would be charged. The charges ranged from depraved heart murder to misconduct in office. For anyone who isn't aware of the officers and the charges, I'll read them now. Officer Cesar R. Goodman Jr. was the driver of the van. He's charged with second-degree depraved heart murder, manslaughter, second-degree assault, vehicular manslaughter, gross negligence, vehicular manslaughter criminal negligence, and misconduct in office. He later had another charge added, reckless endangerment. Now, this charge was leveled against all six officers. The next officer is William G. Porter. He was charged with manslaughter, second-degree assault, and misconduct in office. His trial resulted in a hung jury, and it was reported that the jurors were only one vote away from acquitting him on the most serious charge. The prosecutor said they will retry him. I personally doubt that very much. The next officer is Brian W. Rice. He's charged with manslaughter, second-degree assault, and two counts of misconduct in office. Officer Edward M. Nero, whose trial just ended today in an acquittal on all charges. Officer Garrett E. Miller, he is charged with second-degree assault and two counts of misconduct in office. He is also charged with reckless endangerment. As I said, they were all charged with that. And finally, Alicia D. White, she was charged with manslaughter, second-degree assault, and misconduct in office. There are some facts in this case that can't be disputed. However, the prosecutor's interpretation of these facts leaves something to be desired. Now, the way things are looking, she may not be around too long. And so far, one hung jury and one acquittal on all charges. That doesn't look good for a prosecutor. And from what I've seen and read, it couldn't happen to a nicer person. Now, as I said, these are the facts and they're undisputed. What I'd like to do now is just give you my take on how this is affecting law enforcement. I'm certain that none of these officers thought that any of their actions on that day would result in the city exploding. Let's examine one of these officers, Officer Nero. This young man came to work, got his assignment, which was a bike patrol, and went about his business. Shortly thereafter, he was informed of a pursuit, and he joined in and assisted in the arrest of Freddie Gray. He and another officer apprehend Gray, and then someone calls for a transport. And Gray is on the ground, and he's screaming, but it's unclear why. And suspects routinely cry and scream that the handcuffs are too tight in order to get some kind of concession from the officer. Video from people at the scene showed no abuse of Gray, whether verbally or physically. He did ask for an inhaler, but when asked if he had one on him, he said no, so I guess that was the end of that. I don't recall if that was while he was lying on the ground or if it was when he was placed in the van. Now the van arrives, and the officers, that's Nero and Miller, I believe, take Gray, pick him up, and place him in the van. This is Nero's sole contact with Freddie Gray. For that minor involvement in this arrest, in this whole case, Officer Nero was looking at up to 15 years in prison. All right, all the units continue working. At the end of the day, I'm sure there might have been some mention of, hey, you know, that guy we arrested, he's in pretty bad shape in the hospital. But I don't think any of those officers involved would have worried about that because they felt they didn't do anything wrong. Particularly Officer Nero. And he played such a minor role, he probably thought, hey, nothing's going to happen to me. I didn't do anything. And then came May 1st, and charges came down. I'm certain all these officers were stunned, but none more so than Nero, who had very little contact. When a police officer has even a hint that they're being investigated, their life changes significantly. They can't sleep, they can't eat, they become paranoid, and they'll remain in that state until, hopefully, they're cleared of any wrongdoing. I'm sure, though, that Officer Nero feels that this is the best day of his life. If that's true, that's a shame. What I mean is, never should have come to this. Okay, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, I'm PJ Benzaleski, and you've been listening to Poor in New York.